Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast. We hope you had a wonderful Christmas. We're back with you this week after taking a little week off last week. Today is the 30th of December, and it was pointed out to me actually by a colleague of mine this morning. On this day in 999 AD, Brian Boru led Munster to victory over Leinster in the Battle of Glenmanna. So, Bernard, this has been interpro season for a lot longer than the advent of professional rugby. We're recording remotely, as you can see, this week. We will be back in studio next week. But, Bernard, how are you? Did you have a good Christmas?
Thank you. Yeah, nice Christmas. Yeah, enjoyed the Interpros on the 27th. Plenty to chat through, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, we have Interpros to talk through. More existential crisis talk in the game, or not, if you disagree. And a nice juicy interprovincial transfer to get through also as well. So we'll fire into it. And I'll start at Thomond Park. Munster 8, Leinster 13. First things first, did you enjoy that on Saturday?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was tight. It was intense. The atmosphere was phenomenal. Seeing Leinster being booed out onto the field, you could feel. You know, I haven't seen that in a while. There was a real belief in the Munster fans that potentially they could do a double for the first time in 10 years. But to be honest, Neil, I've been like, I think this is my 30th year of interpros, either having played in them or watched them. There's always been like, nearly always you can take for granted there's going to be physicality, aggression, I suppose intensity. And for me, while I enjoyed it, watched it back twice now, it lacked a lot of creativity and the skill set that we can become accustomed to, that you can actually combine with the physicality and intensity. So I think that's another little, I suppose, example of, well, for whatever reason, Irish rugby players just not being at their best in terms of precision, skill execution, ambition to play, to create. And it's gone, it's carried on now most of the season, to be honest. I know there's been sparks where we've been able to play, but the challenge is it's being able to play in intensity, being able to play with freedom and intensity. At the moment, our skill set isn't allowing us to do that.
Yeah, I thought it was a great example actually at the weekend of how being at a match can kind of change your opinion of it, like your opinion completely different either watching it on TV or being at the game. We were both obviously there on Saturday, and at the time I was really, really enjoying it. I thought it was like roll your sleeves up, proper winter interpro kind of stuff. It was tight and tense, and anytime there was a mistake, it felt like it could be a game defining mistake. And I tweeted out a couple of times how much I was enjoying it, and you know, there was some agreement, but there was a lot of disagreement to it as well. And it probably wasn't until I actually kind of looked back at it the following day, when you're removed from the occasion, because I thought as well it was as good an atmosphere at Thomond Park as I've been sitting in for quite a few years, I thought, to be totally honest. I thought it was absolutely hopping from start to finish, and that probably sucked you in. And I think overall, as you kind of said, when you bring in the wider Ireland picture, it's a bit it was a bit like my diet over the last few weeks, where I'm enjoying it in the moment, but I might regret it come February, you know?
Yeah, I think, and I also, you know, like I'm not the person who feels you have to see 7 or 8 tries to think it's a great game. Like I can enjoy a match that one team wins 3-0, you know. But within that, there could be plenty of play, just so you don't get over the try line. And I know it's interesting. Ty Byrne obviously doubled down on the narrative coming out of Munster, and not just Munster, but coming out of pockets of Irish rugby. Leo, in fairness, post match, we can chat about that in a minute. But one of the interesting things he did say was basically kind of how they reviewed the Munster Leinster game at Croke Park. And you know, Clayton McMillan's comment that, you know, they made it a dogfight and Leinster don't like dogfights. But then they looked within it, and the statistics that they picked out were that Leinster had more possession, more territory, gave away less penalties, 8 penalties to 15, kicked the ball less, etc. And that was their menu or plan for this week to reverse that. And they effectively did. The stats are nearly reversed. The only thing I would say is that in the Munster-Leinster game in Croke Park, Those stats are a little bit warped because once we're so far ahead, that Leinster no choice but to keep the ball. Yeah. So, that's you have to understand that as well. That teams who are 20 points down, 14 points, 50 points down, they're not going to keep kicking it away as much. So, but yeah, it was just interesting from that point of view. And obviously, Ty Byrne talking about how hard it is to play at the moment. I actually think, and this is something I'd like to address. I think we have become very negative towards the rule change, and it seems to be blinding our ability to see the positives from it. And it's not, I mean, if the game was in crisis across England and France, you'd say, yeah, it's ruined the game. But luckily, I watch a lot of rugby. It's not URC, and effectively, it hasn't stopped teams playing at all. Top 14 in particular is still creating some teams are creating some brilliant, attractive, winning rugby. And likewise, I watched Bath Northampton. I watched lots of Premiership, but I watched Bath Northampton the other night. And while there's kicking in it, it's not becoming dour and stodgy because both teams, or sorry, nearly all teams in England, from what I can see, have a plan to how they can actually exploit ball being kicked onto them or ball that they kick in terms of creating attacking opportunities from that. So that's just an interesting narrative that we've heard a couple of times now from people very important in Irish rugby. And I wonder how long it'll last because I don't think the rule is changing, Neil. So we either get with it and find a way of excelling with it, or we're going to left behind.
Yeah, and for those maybe who haven't heard the comments, so like I think in his initial comments after the game, Tadhg Byrne had said they were frustrated. It was like it was a very stop start match, and he was pushed a little bit on it as to what he meant by that. And this is just some of the stuff he said. So he said, "Let's be honest about it. The style of the game has gone backwards. If we're being serious, teams are just kicking the ball. Why? Because it's a 50-50 chance of getting the ball back. Teams are going to set pieces more because if you go up for a 50-50 in the air and you get a knock on, you get a scrum. And if you have a good scrum, you can get a penalty into the corner. It's just becoming a set piece and kicking game with the way they've changed the rules. You see teams kicking more, and I think it's going to continue that way unless they decide to do something about it." One of the other things he said, I guess all teams are probably spending a lot more time on how they exit and their kicking game and all kinds of stuff like that. It probably takes away from attack and defense a little because you have to spend so much time kicking on it. To your point as well about how this doesn't seem to be affecting the Premiership and the top 14 as much. I wrote up those quotes from Tadhg Byrne yesterday and tweeted out. And I know we're talking about like one Twitter reply here, but more often than not, Twitter replies can be people giving out about things. But I thought there was one very interesting one. It was just from someone who replied to me saying, it was a Premiership, an English Premiership fan. He says, I don't see the URC, but as a season ticket holder in the English Premiership, I have to say that attacking intent and execution in our league has never been higher. So, and it is curious. I know, as we were kind of saying as well, when someone with Tadhg Byrne's stature in the game says those things, you do have to give them the time of day they deserve.
Yeah.
Similar when Johnny Sexton said those things, said maybe not as strongly a few weeks ago. Mike Prendergast has said stuff. James Lowe has spoken, not so much around the kicking stuff, but I think his was more around maybe tackle heights and things like that. So when people like this in the game speak up, you do have to give them the time of day. But would it concern you that the only people we seem to be hearing complaining about this are people in the Irish system?
Yeah, so when Prendy kind of made those comments, whatever, about two weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I initially didn't agree with them, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't completely out of sync with what the game was saying. So I rang a few of my coaching friends who are coaching the Premiership and the top 14. A couple of lads from Super Rugby who obviously haven't played under it yet, but they all thought it was a good take, to be honest. They thought the game had become quite stodgy in the fact that if you kicked this, it was very the opposition were more likely going to catch it. But because teams were so organized on the kick chase as well, it was quite difficult to do anything with it, that the opposition often kicked it back to you. So, and they had really embraced the idea of how they can attack from chaotic situations. and how much harder it was going to be to defend those. So they didn't. They were loving it, actually. They were loving it. A couple in South Africa as well, who naturally would be quite conservative, but think this is a huge opportunity to exploit space in a way that hadn't been exploited before. So it's very interesting the kind of view we've had to it. I think the interesting comments from Tadhg, and it's important to remember he's only 25, 30 minutes off the pitch here, right? He's playing a match. Is you make it set piece. It increases the chances of set piece, and if you have a good scrum, but Munster didn't have a good scrum on the night, right? So he's in a pack that know that every time they're setting up for a scrum, if it's Leinster ball, there's a strong chance it's going to be a penalty against them. So that gets into your mind. But I think if you're Munster, so the start of the game, the key against Leinster is, and I know that they get the Leinster score first in the Croke Park, but realistically, Leinster, you want to have Leinster chasing the game rather than controlling it. And like Munster from the kickoff, I don't know if you remember, it's just what sticks in my mind. Crowley kicks a brilliant kick. It actually flirts with the touchline. And James Lowe is unsure whether to catch it or not, right? But he has to catch it because it's going to bounce in. He has time to give a pass to Caelan Doris, which Doris is able to run across field a little bit. And Lee Barron, unfortunately, for Munster, gets caught on the wrong side of the ruck. Penalty, right? Okay. Leinster kick and touch. They maul it. Edmund Ogbo, because the ball is going back so quickly, he collapses it. Another penalty. And that's how Leinster piggyback into the 22. So there's areas outside the game. There's areas outside this law change. And that's just giving one example. But the Mike Healy drop when Munster had a chance to go wide gives Leinster another scrum. It's reset a couple of times. It's pressure, etc. So unfortunately, like I don't think Leinster were delighted having lots of scrums their night because their scrum was a weapon on the night. And this is the issue. But unfortunately, from an Irish rugby point of view, you can't guarantee that Leinster scrum, which will be the Irish scrum, you would imagine, obviously with Furlong starting, or Paddy McCarthy starting instead of Porter, or Ronan Kelleher, Dan Sheehan, those players would be the Irish scrum. Are they able to milk scrum penalties galore against
Against
England or
France.
France? Probably not. So it's great way for Leinster to win the game, but is it actually a sign that we're on the right track? And do we need more strings to our bow? So I think the challenge at the moment is that Ireland, very unusually, Neil, like we used to be the trend setters. I know Shane Hinnibar said that about Munster last week. And I don't see what trends Munster are setting at the moment, bar being an improved team, being harder to beat. But I think, even things like the choke tackle, the aerial game under Joe Schmidt, we were the best. The breakdown ball presentation, ability to recycle the ball, we were the best. Everyone else started to copy us. The Andy Farrell way of playing, ball movements, shapes, we were the best. And this, it seems now we've been caught in the hop by this, and we're not just setting the way, we're actually behind, which is worrying. And also the drop off in the skill execution. Because we're never going to be the biggest team. So if we're not skillful and highly technical, we're going to struggle. And even something like, forget about the aerial for a second. The kicking, our kicking skills the other night, like Craig Casey, brilliant kicker of the ball. But on the night, he kicked really poorly. Some of the contestables from Munster that wasn't kicked from Craig were nowhere near where they should be. So hence Munster, because they're kicking badly, they're going to benefit less from the aerial game. So I think Tadhg, the defeated captain, absolutely his opinion is very relevant. But I think in the cold light of day, he'll see the other deficiencies Munster had that were more relevant to the defeat than the aerial game.
Yeah, you kind of half you half answered my next question there, talking about maybe how some of Munster's kicking the other night was poor, and like I know Casey to start the second half had two poor attempts at exits that he just got right under. But maybe in the wider picture of Irish rugby, where if we're bringing in Leinster and the other provinces in here as well, and probably Ireland from what you've seen in Six Nations and summer in November, well, probably less so summer because it was just an odd summer. But is the frustrations the Irish players or team or coaches are having or experiencing, are they more born out of the poor quality of the kick and chase, or what they're doing with the ball once the scraps actually come back on their side? Which do you think they need to work more a little bit harder on?
No, no,
getting that ball back, or actually what they do with it.
I think they need to have a plan. They need to get excited about what they're going to do with it, and then they need to have the skill execution to execute that and the confidence. I don't know. I think it'll be Farrell. It'll really Munster have the skill set, I think, in general. Although they've gone away from it a little bit in terms of their ambition, I think they've become more conservative. And there was opportunities the other night to pull the trigger a little bit earlier against Leinster, which I think they did do in Croke Park, and they didn't. They went into their shell a little bit and became a little bit kick focused or carry focused, and that actually suited Leinster because Leinster were nice and physical, nice and compact defensively, and were doing a great job of slowing the ruck ball down, which made the next carry even harder or made that space harder to see. So, yeah, I think Leinster is an interesting one. I mean, they obviously feel that this is the model that that can lead them to success, and it is very hard to break down. But having said that, I thought, Munster, without a scrum, with a very bad kicking game, and with some poor skill execution, ball in hand, we're only a try away from them. Despite the fact that Leinster had nine British and Irish Lions, Rico Ioane, Aelia Capp, All Black, and five internationals starting, and a Ty Furlong, a nine Test line on the bench. So, that's worrying for me. Is that you want to play the power game? You have all the tools to play it, and yet you're still only scoring 13 points. And Munster, sure, Munster were brave and all that stuff, but Munster aren't. You compare the two teams on paper. What did Munster have? Munster have like probably two or three of those Munster players would have started for Leinster, I think. So that's a little bit worrying that the power game is very effective, and you see the likes of Bath use it very well, or Northampton, or not Northampton, or the Stormers use it very well at the moment. But they're generally more dominant, if that makes sense. And the game isn't like unless we're kind of hanging on at the end. I think if Jack Crowley gets that pass away, actually Munster probably score and win the game. So that's how dangerous it is if you're not better with the ball that you do have in terms of converting that into points.
Very randomly, just when you mentioned if Jack Crowley gets that pass away at the end, I know it's something that's cropped up a couple of times now. Slight tangent here now, but like,
Not gone.
what's your thoughts on a game ending because a defending team knocks on the
Yeah, I
ball?
don't.
It's
I
and
understand
like
why.
it's not. I'm not in any way suggesting it should be like a penalty for Munster because of a deliberate knock on. It was clearly a completely accidental knock on in a tackle. There's just something incredibly, deflating or kind of anticlimactic for a match to end in that way, isn't it?
I think it's nonsensical. Yeah,
Yeah.
we saw it during the World Cup, Women's World Cup, didn't we? The knock
That
on of the
was that
line-out.
was the
Yeah,
game,
but
sorry, yeah.
it doesn't happen all the time. But
Yeah.
particularly when it's a one-score game, I see no reason why we couldn't restart with a scrum there. I think in actual fact, I'm part of a global alliance to look at the rule laws of the game with World Rugby, and it's on my notebook. And it wasn't just from the other night; it was on my notebook for a while. To bring up, I think fans get so shortchanged by it a little bit, and
Yeah.
we're willing to stop the game plenty for other things. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a sour taste because I know that was an accidental one, but it just changes the defender's mindset a little bit as well.
Yeah, and I like a for like obviously I wouldn't be blaming the referee in any
No.
way for that. Obviously, like it is the rule. He obviously had to enforce it. It is just something that popped up. But to move it over to kind of put the focus on Leinster, we spoke a good bit about Munster there. As you were talking about with their attack, the kind of glass half full approach over the last few weeks with Leinster has been, okay, they've been arm wrestling and scrapping their way through a lot of victories. Defence is starting to improve. It was very, very good the other night. The attack isn't quite there, but once they start building up these wins, it will start to click. Are you still a little bit worried about whether or not it will click?
I think they'll score. They will score because they're so good at getting into 22, as I said, because they can force penalties, and they have a lot of power. And I think so. My review of Leinster would be they look in great shape physically. They came down there with the right attitude, determined to right some wrongs, determined to win the game, and I've no question mark around their work rate or anything like that. And togetherness, just unfortunately, as I said, my fear is that, but I'm pretty confident they need to be better attack wise to win things. Because they won't, there will be games where they're not going to have scrum dominance, or the opposition are going to kick as badly. Or I think also my gut feeling, or not my gut feeling, my feeling was during the game was, wow, Leinster are getting away with murder here at the defensive breakdown. That. And at the end, they weren't giving away penalties, which is very smart by them. But they were being coached out of penalties. And by that stage, the job was done. The ruck was 4 or 5 seconds. And that made it so much easier to smash the next ball carrier. So a non-Irish referee or a non-URC referee, which they're going to come up against in Europe, would blow them off the park, I think. And that's why the French game and the English game are different at the moment, is because there's zero tolerance on coaching. Players know what they won't get away with, so don't even do it, because there's a consistency of refereeing interpretations that has made the game easier to play, I think, actually, and to watch better, more pleasing on the eye. So I think that could cost them, because they become accustomed to getting away with that. And also, yeah, their motto is, if they believe the team who gives away the most penalties wins. It can often win if you're superior. If you're superior in terms of the talent you have. But when you go up against a team who have similar talent, which there is others out there, then that ill-discipline could cost you, because they are able to kick to the corner and maul you over like you did to Munster. So that's the look at Leinster have won 6 in a row. It's not all doom and gloom at all. As I said, the players are really showing up and look good physically, whereas we were worried about the Lions tour effect in terms of, emotional energy and physical energy. That's not there. Unfortunately, the question mark is basic skill execution. Like Rico, for example, he gave the pass to Jimmy O'Brien for the try, when he could have scored himself. But apart from that, he's just been used as a battering ram, and he's well able to carry the ball, and that's great. But whereas last year you had Barrett, who I think his creativity and his all-round skill set and his understanding of how to manipulate the defense, etc., made others run into space more. So that's just look at Rico's not that long in the country, etc. Can he pass? Yes, he can. But at the moment, it's just when you watch him and you see how he would have played for teams previously, he wasn't just this tuck the ball under the arm carry merchant. And for whatever reason. And maybe he wants to just lay down a marker. I understand that as well. But just in general, some of the execution from Leinster of their passing is making them have to kick, because they're not actually still on the front foot, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's not overly negative, but you have to ask questions. And I have to say, like, I don't think we should call this game as the greatest, shock in the world that Leinster were able to go to Thomond Park and won. They've been doing this for the last 7 years, haven't they? But I'm often with a weaker team, Neil. Often with a weaker team on paper. So that's what I find frustrating, is that we're being asked to kind of call it as an amazing feat. Whereas when I look at Leinster, I see an amazing team with a track record of being able to play both sides of the ball. And at the moment, one side is nowhere near as proficient as it could be. And that'll be the obvious thing they need to fix.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Plenty more to come on them. I'm gonna bring in Connacht here, because Connacht play Leinster this Saturday evening at the Aviva, 3rd of January. And they also obviously confirmed the signing of Ciarán Frawley from Leinster for next season as well. The good part, we'll talk about the good part for Connacht now, the Ciarán Frawley signing, before we get to the more difficult stuff, which there's a lot to get through there. But on the good stuff, Ciarán Frawley joining for next season. We obviously expected something along these lines when Stuart Lancaster arrived a few months ago, that he was going to try have a bit of a raid on Leinster and bring some players over. This is the first of them. Ciarán Frawley, obviously on paper, excellent signing. The big question is, where is he going to play?
He's going to play 10. He's going to play 10. There's absolutely no
But
doubt.
as soon as there's an injury at 12, does that change things?
I would think that he's been given a commitment that he's going to get a proper chance at 10. And
Okay.
I I think I would be shocked if that wasn't part of the attraction of going there. Yeah, obviously he's a squad player if he's needed somewhere else, but they have good depth there at centre. They're trying to build depth at fullback. Yeah, I think he's going to be 10.
Good signing.
Excellent signing, yeah. Excellent signing for Connacht, an excellent signing for Irish rugby, and I'd say an excellent signing, an excellent move for him himself as a player. He's been incredibly loyal to Leinster. He has probably stayed 2 or 3 years longer than maybe others might have, you know. And he's given it everything. Whenever he's been asked to play in other positions, he's come in and done well. But I think he looks and sees that by being so versatile, it's not helping him get a regular run of games. And I think 10 is a position that we've seen him flirt in, but we haven't seen him get the chance to play consistently or lead the team and be clearly number one. I think his talent deserves at least a crack at it. And he's experienced now. He's a lot of rugby left to play in his career, so it's not a, you know, going down at the end of his career. He's ambitious, and I'd say he looks around, Neil, and looks at the depth chart of 10 in Ireland, and he sees that probably the position that there's the least certainty around who the future man is, you know. So I think it's a real boost for Connacht at a time when they're struggling a little bit, obviously, as a 10 into pros in a row without winning. And yeah, the Ulster home defeat and the Dragons away performance and only having won two games. So in the URC. So it's definitely a big boost for Connacht at a time when on the field just things aren't happening for them.
Yeah, to stay on Frawley for a second, it does feel like even just from a wider Irish rugby point of view, might kind of come across a little bit hyperbolic, but it does feel like this is a very, very important transfer for Irish rugby as a whole. Because if this goes right and Ciarán Frawley hits the ground running at Connacht and it rejuvenates his Irish career, that is the inspiration for a lot of other players to potentially try the same thing and, you know, move around, don't get kind of comfortable where you
Yeah.
are, and to try something new to maybe force Andy Farrell's hand a little bit more. If it doesn't though, and it doesn't really go to plan and it doesn't kick on his Ireland career, it could leave us another couple of years behind in terms of players not really taking that opportunity.
Yeah, well, look, I think it starts with getting selected for Ireland, and I think Andy Farrell has been pretty consistent in picking Leinster second choice players, you know, for Irish squads, and even to not just for not for big squads, for Match 23. So that has obviously made us less attractive to leave, you know, because you're able to still get the rewards of playing international rugby, even though you might be starting every week. But I think it's going to be really interesting now. I think the line, I can understand why Farrell did that, because Ireland were being successful, and those Leinster players were often able to come in and perform at a high level because the way Leinster trained and played was very similar to Ireland. That's not the case anymore. That's not the case anymore. So it's probably now more important to be getting game time for a province than being in a system where the training sessions and the match prep are very similar to Ireland, because that's obviously shifted. So I think it will be more. There'll be more movement. I also look at. There's certainly a feeling among some of those Leinster players that it's less attractive to stay now because of lack of silverware. Like that's you know, players talk, and certainly the feeling is when they went under Joe Schmidt era, when they were winning trophies, it was great to be part of a winning team and winning squad and accumulating medals. That isn't coming as thick and fast now. Obviously, with the URC medal, and that was great, but that's also going against them. And then the third thing going against them is, sorry, going against Leinster's ability to retain them is that financially, obviously, with the central contracts not being fully funded now, they have to make choices. And I think that probably led to Leo having a dig at Zeebo post-match. I think Leo feels, and people in Leinster feel hard done by that their other players aren't still in Leinster. But like, unfortunately, that's sport, that's pro sport, you know. Even in the NFL, everyone has a squad size and a salary cap that they have to. So I actually think Leinster, I think Leo is it was a poor argument to make, I think. And I understand he might be frustrated about Frawley, because I think Frawley's the first one, Neil, in a long time that they actually wanted to keep. desperately to
Right.
keep. The rest were all obvious decisions. So Michael Mayle and Lee
Yeah.
Barron. Like, the reality was Michael Mayle only had.
You're probably going back to Joey Carberry probably for the
Yeah, Joey
last
Carberry's the
time.
last one, and that's how
Yeah.
long was that? That's like if you're only losing one, two in what was Joey, 6, 7 years ago? And that's
Eight
not
years
bad.
ago.
8 years ago, so that's not
Yeah.
bad. You know what I mean? That's not bad. So it shows you, but like his comment about the Leinster players playing for Munster the other night, like Michael Mayle, Andy Farrell rates Michael Mayle fourth choice blue set behind Jack Boyle, Paddy McCarthy, and Andrew Porter, who were all fit and available. Lee Barron, he was rated fourth choice hooker, by, and maybe Andy Farrell and Leo Cullen are wrong, but that was the rating. And Tom Farrell obviously has gone a long, long time, and but wasn't kept by Leinster. Like, that was the, there were the, Ty Burn was chopped by Leinster. Ty Burn's the only one I think who's outside of Leinster now that was in the Leinster system that you could argue would come back and start for Leinster. I think Timoney's a great player. Prendergast, Keane Prendergast, O'Connor's a great player, but Leinster, like if Leinster have Conan, Doris, and Van der Fleer available, none of them start. So I actually think, and like Leinster had three Kiwis in their back line. You know what I mean? It's not like they're fully homegrown. I know they have more homegrown than everybody else. The John McKee, Munster on the bench. So it was a funny argument to make, but I think the reality is it puts big pressure on Leo because if you're play actually the more Leinster excellence players he plays against every week in the pros, the more likely he should win. Unless he's making poor decisions around who he keeps. But it might be a sign of Frawley mightn't be the only one. I think that's the issue. I think there might be more now who leave. And also I think what's really interesting is we always think that it has to be Leinster players who the other provinces tap up. But I'm fascinated to see Ulster chase Matthew Devine. Because there often used to be Ulster used to raid Connacht, if you remember. You know what I mean? Whether it's back to Ronan McCormack, John Cooney, etc., Mick Kearney. But I wonder, will the new way of Irish rugby now, with Leinster probably being less financially dominant or supported and not winning as much, which that can change, obviously. But certainly, a lot of players are saying that, it's not as nice, it's not as good to be there if you're not winning. Will Munster target some Connacht players? Will Munster target some Ulster players? And suddenly we get these players who are maybe not getting as much game time as they would like, who suit a different style of play better, and they can become starters for that province. So that's I haven't heard who Munster are looking at elsewhere if they even are, but I think Munster will be an attractive place to go for somebody who's not starting for the province as well now because it's a new regime, obviously great fan base, good facilities, etc. So yeah, we mightn't be just talking about Leinster players moving. It could be a little bit more open market across the board.
Let's talk about Connacht as a whole, results-wise. 29-24 defeat to Ulster at the weekend. That followed the even more disappointing 48-28 defeat to the Dragons a week previous, which does not reflect the scoreline does not reflect the kind of game it was, to be totally honest. Two wins from seven in the URC, they're ninth in the table, even with a game in hand. So they're actually in the table, they're not in a disastrous position, but there's eight bonus points in there, which are doing a lot of heavy lifting because at times over the last two games, they have been as poor as at any stage in the last few seasons.
Yeah, very worrying. And I'm trying to think of the exact quote from Stuart Lancaster, but it was kind of the grounds of, I still believe in my methods, wasn't it? And I think it's the interesting part for him because they can play, and even their start against Ulster was very bright. They had Ulster completely under the cosh down to 22, and a good Ulster defence, and Ulster didn't panic, but still Connacht just didn't convert, and then they go asleep for not go to sleep, but they get ransacked then by Ulster for a period, and then the game is over. They chase the game incredibly well. Like, they're amazingly frustrating that it's not just inconsistent from game to game, it's within games.
Yeah,
Ospreys away, Neil, 21 up at half time and lose the game. And I know that Stewart is probably the coach, well, he's certainly the coach in Irish rugby who certainly publicizes how much work he does around leadership, but I believe he does do more work around leadership and composure than any of the others. That's his very much something he's passionate about, and yet you're not seeing any of that. Sorry, you're not seeing the benefits of that yet on the team.
On to that point, and about how it's not like game to game, it's moments in game to moments in game. Against the Dragons, it was 7-all after when they fell apart, but they were 7-0 up, or it was 7-all. They were in control of the game. They have a penalty in a solid position. Josh Ioane just completely misses touch. That's something that's been in his game. But the 10 minutes either side of halftime against the Dragons, they conceded 27 unanswered points. There were three tries, two penalties that the Dragons kicked, plus a very, very costly Paul Boyle yellow card, which was part of that penalty try as well. So that was from minutes 30 to 50, 27 points, game over. Last week against Ulster, they were 10-0 up with 33 minutes on the clock. After 54 minutes, they were 26-10 down. Conceded 26 points in 19 minutes of game time, or 21 minutes of game time. It is those two games in a row where just that midsection, more or less 10 minutes either side of half time, they have completely ended their hopes of winning the game. And I know they went back in the Dragons and they scored some tries and they got themselves a bonus point, and they scored some tries last week and got themselves another bonus point. So they're limiting the damage somewhat. But in terms of morale, they are very, very damaging defeats.
They're very damaged defeats, and also I think the Ulster defeat, Neil, is going to be harder to take because they're also a team in a rebuild, if that makes sense. I know that they're a year ahead of Stewart, and like Richie had a tough time until he got his coaching team right, and obviously did a little bit of recruitment and brought through some youngsters. But realistically, you know, Ulster are still in the Challenge Cup. Ulster are a team that Connacht would like to hope that they can beat at home. And it's not even the defeat. It was, as you said, the nature of it, the switching off and then coming from behind and a bit of a late charge without ever. And even at the end, that Sean O'Brien penalty at the end was like madness. So even when there's a chance they can pull off a huge comeback, they kind of shoot themselves in the foot. So very, very frustrating. But as I said, you know, that Frawley news was done, that contract was done. I'm not sure if this was the week they were going to announce it, but it was announced, and I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Is one, it just gives the fans a bit of hope, and obviously maybe settles things down with some players as well who might be looking elsewhere, that reinforcements are coming. Also, in fairness to Lancaster, it's not his coaching team. You know, he inherited a coaching team. He will have he has a spot for a forwards coach for next year, which obviously he's recruiting for at the moment. So, we have to give him lots of time. But I think the players have missed an opportunity to get up and running a little bit quicker than they're doing.
To bring it back to to bring all of this even back to maybe something we were talking about around Munster, Connacht, there hasn't been voices from Connacht complaining about the way the game is being played at the moment. But when you look at them and the way they are playing, are they playing a little bit behind the times? Are they playing rugby that probably isn't as functional in 2025 as it might have been in 2018 or 2019?
Yeah, it looks like that. It looks like that, to be honest. And I'm not saying they have to become a kick-heavy team, but it's like Leinster used to play under Stewart, I thought, a little bit, but without the cattle, if that makes sense. Without the execution and the composure. The fairness to Stewart was very good at getting really good performances out of the second string in Leinster as well, but a lot of second string players are probably more confident. I think you have to take into account that this Connacht team have been probably battered and bruised over the last 6 or 7 years, and I felt the home win against Benetton round one was a, you know, was reinforced. What all the sound bites were from Connacht was amazing pre-season, ready to go, but unfortunately just haven't had enough signature wins to really reinforce that. So maybe the way they're playing is the way forward for them. But at the moment, it's a little bit out of sync. It's less balanced than some of the other teams they're playing.
Yeah, and potentially worryingly, next two games in the URC, Leinster away, Leinster home. doesn't really get much easier over the next few weeks. I know there's two
No.
Challenge Cups in between those, but that's a tough run.
Yeah, tough run. The only thing is the home game
The grand
Leinster won
opening.
out. Yeah, no, it stands up, and Leinster won out of their internationals, I don't think. So that's obviously a huge advantage. And then I think this week, I presume some of those Leinster players will have to be rested as part of that if Leo's going to play them in the two European games. So they may not be going against, they won't be, I don't think they'll be going against a team as strong as the one that went to Thomond. But still, yes, it's not the opposition that you want when you're desperate for a positive result and a win.
Let's give Ulster their flowers now before finishing up, because continuing to impress nice and steadily throughout this season. Another good bonus point win, particularly after having a real like particularly after a sucker punch late on against Leinster, where okay, maybe the kind of the writing was on the wall for a little while against Leinster, and they kind of were slowly sucked back into that game. But that defeat to Leinster had the potential to be a real killer. And potentially, you've seen it in the past. Players might stew on these things for a little while. It was really important they got back out there and got a victory away from home, big Interpro over Christmas, and they did that. And when they had their opportunities in that middle third of the game, as much as Connacht made it easy for them, when they had their opportunities, they took them.
Yeah, and they're playing the best rugby. They're the best rugby on the eye. And they're a team who are very comfortable with the ball at the moment. And look dangerous with it. I spoke to a few of them post that game against Leinster, and they were disappointed, but they realized, like, they're not naive. They realized their bench compared to Leinster's bench was a little bit under power, and that was the turning point of the game. That was the game. So I think they got a bit of confidence from that, Neil, even though it was a loss. But they also knew that they had a better squad heading to Galway, with some players back. And I thought Isichuku, and Ward showed how much they were missed against Leinster, because both of them are making a lot of good things happen at the moment. And was it worrying to see Augustus get injured, but he's been carrying an injury anyway, so. He's been playing with a back injury, so maybe this will give him a chance to get 100% right. But big win for them on the road, and now they obviously have a massive game against Munster, which if they win that, they're absolutely flying. And there's a real confidence around how they're playing, what they're doing. And I thought Stockdale as well. I never had him as being a creative 15, except for himself, if that makes sense, in terms of being a running threat. But seeing him being able to bring others into the game, while also being a running threat himself, is a real nice added weapon for Ulster.
They look like a team that really, really kind of like know what they are and have their identity well sorted out. 'Cause after that Leinster game the other week, I was at the Aviva, and they were obviously very, very disappointed not to win the game, but the way Richie Murphy spoke afterwards, it was a very matter of fact. Well, look, if you look at the two benches, we kind of knew we were going to be up against it. There was obviously a knowledge there that okay, look, the game went against us in that final quarter against Leinster, but ultimately we know what we are. Like, we know who we're good enough to beat. That they're not getting too ahead of themselves, or they're not getting too low when they lose, and they're kind of able to stay on that even keel. And even you look at the game last weekend against Connacht. Connacht score a couple of tries to get back into it. It's down to what, a 2 or 3 point game, or 3 point game heading into the or 2 point game heading into the final few minutes. But they never panic. They close it out, get that penalty late on, knock it over, and comfortably see out the win.
Yeah, and I think as well, Neil, like, for all, Mark Sexton's getting massive credit, and their attack game is much improved. I think defensively, I think Willie Falloon also deserves some credit. And I know he'd be disappointed with some of the points they gave up, but in general, they're way harder to break down than they were. I mean, that was the big frustrating for me for Ulster over the last couple of years, was sometimes it didn't look like they wanted to defend as a team, or didn't have enough pride in it. And that's certainly back. It was at the Bulls game at home. It was very obvious, and you've seen it, quite consistently there, that they're hard to break down. They work for each other, and yeah, and at the end when they needed just to be composed, they stayed composed, and they're heading for Champions Cup next year, in my opinion, and that'll be that's the first immediate target, I think, for them. And yeah, as I said, this game next week against Munster, like, that's one where you wanna you've gone well away from home, competitive against Leinster, beat Connacht with a bonus. Now go and finish that block of three games by beating Munster, which won't be an easy feat. Munster are better than Connacht.
Yeah, I that's actually why I'm looking forward to this game so much on Friday night, because I think the last few years, specifically this game in Belfast between Ulster and Munster, the narrative going into it has generally been just whatever way the seasons have gone for both sides. The narrative going into it has been, Jesus, whoever loses this one is absolutely goose now. It just kind of it's always had that feeling going into it. Whereas for once in God knows how long, we're kind of coming into it, both with Ulster and Munster, saying whoever wins this is actually in a really, really good position heading into the second half of the season.
Yeah, for sure, and has all the momentum.
Yeah.
Because Munster would be disappointed with the Munster were happy with Ospreys away, but you know, even the Gloucester win didn't really kind of fill them with joy or confidence, you know. So, and obviously Leinster, while they've moved, they've got better, and McMillan admitted that. Still, it's frustrating. So, a win for Munster in Ulster will be massive for them heading into Europe at the last round of the URC before the international break.
Absolutely. Very last thing to say, Werner Kock. He's mid contract negotiations, I'd say, at the moment, is
He
he?
is,
He can't
in
stop
fairness,
scoring.
no, in fairness, was it Bryn Cunningham who would have signed him? I didn't necessarily agree with them using a winger spot as a
Yeah.
foreign player spot at the time. But he's really got stuck in. He's contributed. He's on fire at the moment. It's become a big part of that team. The only worry I would have for him would be it's a position that they have plenty of options now. Obviously, he's scoring tries. He's the main man. And I wonder, do they need, if they don't get Joey Carberry, will they need to go non-Irish for 10? That's the, and then, you know, are they allowed? Are they allowed? Or do they need a big lock? Like, that's the challenge. Because obviously you've got, look, Angus Bell is leaving, but there's a rumor they're trying to keep him. So that would be one foreign player. Augustus is your second, and obviously the Cock is your third. But yeah, it's been great to watch, and he plays with an energy and a physicality that's very different, and he's been great value.
Yeah, I remember first seeing him in the 2021 Lions tour and a couple of those warm-up games, and he was an absolute head case. He's
Maniac, yeah.
whatever way things are going, he's always great value. So look, that's Ulster and Munster on Friday night, 7:45 p.m. Leinster and Connacht then on Saturday, 5:30. Live commentary on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1 as well. Bernard, thanks a million for joining us in this between Christmas and New Year's slot where you don't know what day it is. Have a happy new year, and
Yeah.
we'll speak to you next week back in studio. We'll see you then.
See you later.